We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, it is still the top news story, the shooting in Florida. Of course, the repercussions are flying everywhere. Blame pointed everywhere. Responsibility being directed everywhere. And whether it's writ large on our federal government or small on the state of Florida or even smaller on the law enforcement there in Broward County or on the teachers or on the families or on, well, what's missing from this diagnosis? A lot of talk about guns, but guns, of course, are inanimate objects. People commit crimes. So how does a crime like this even get hatched in the mind of someone? How does someone with a mindset to kill so many get missed by all the checks and balances in our society? Is it family? Is it government? Or is there something in between those two? Joining us to talk about family, neighborhood, the state, and mass shootings, Pastor Hans Feeney, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled To Prevent School Shootings, We Need to Get Into Our Neighborhoods. Hans, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's good to be back.
We are being bombarded with analysis, diagnosis after the Florida high school shootings of what went wrong, who's responsible, where the solution lies. What are you not hearing in that analysis?
Yeah, so in the response to most mass shootings, you usually get kind of two typical responses. So from liberals, you generally get some response about how this is the fault of kind of government at large, and this is the fault of Congress and the Senate or the president or whoever may be in power for failing to pass gun control legislation. And then usually we'll get conservatives who will talk about how this is all due to the breakdown in the family, and they'll point out that, you know, in virtually every case of a mass shooter, you've got some fatherless young man, you've got some kid whose parents were divorced, who, you know, had a broken relationship with his dad, things of that nature. Now, this case is a little bit different in that it's almost more of a debate as to, it's all sort of just kind of focused on government at this point. It's now, one, there's just one side saying, well, it's all the government's fault for being influenced by the NRA and not passing sensible gun control legislation. And then you've got, you know, people who are pointing out that, well, you know, the more local government level, the law enforcement there, you had people failing to do their jobs left and right that led to that. But what really seems to be generally missing in most of these conversations is a discussion of an estate or an institution sort of in the middle between families and government. And that's really, I suppose, what we could call the community. That's just kind of a collection of people, like-minded people in your geographic area committed to helping each other navigate the struggles and difficulties of life. And really, the purpose of the community is to basically give aid to families when they're broken, and it's to give aid to governments when they're broken with ineffectiveness and things of that nature. And very few people seem to ever discuss that, and that certainly seems to be the case again this time.
You begin your Federalist piece quoting from the reformer Martin Luther, a kind of a pearl of wisdom when he's dealing with the issue of the fourth commandment, honor your father and mother. What does the reformer have to say there?
Well, in the Large Catechism, in his explanation of the fourth commandment, honor your father and mother, Luther has this wonderful quote where he says, all authority flows and is born from the authority of parents. He says, when a father is unable alone to educate his rebellious and irritable child, said in good Luther fashion, he goes on, he uses a schoolmaster to teach the child. If he's too weak, he gets the help of his friends and neighbors. Then he goes on to say, so also men are also called fathers in the scriptures, who in their government perform the functions of a father and have a paternal heart towards their subordinates. So the overall theological point that Luther is making in this is he's basically saying, look, there are times when, so all authority for any kind of society comes ultimately from the family. So for Luther, very much the family is the building block of society. But there are, of course, times when the responsibilities that fathers in particular have of providing for and protecting their families, when they can't do those things all on their own. So with his example, if a father can't educate his child by himself, he needs to enlist. Luther doesn't use the term community. He uses the term household, which is more of a feudalistic concept, but it's basically the equivalent that we would have of community. We're basically saying you need people in your community to help you out. Even when the community is too small or weak, then sort of even more families come together to form government. So Luther's point in all of this is that it's a theological point, which is that as Christians, we owe our obedience not only to our parents, and so honor your father and mother not only means that we need to obey our biological parents, but that we also have to obey those who are exercising the authority that's been delegated to them, both those in our community, so teachers and employers, as well as heads of state and our governmental representatives. The purpose of all of these institutions is to provide a peaceful and quiet life. It's to enable families to provide for their children in the way that they ought to. And so that, therefore, on account of that, you need a, just as you need a functional state to, you know, keep China from entering your country and enslaving all of you or whatever it may be, that's obviously a challenge that a single family can't handle on its own. You also need a functional community, which enables families to get the help that they need.
So you have a kind of very simple illustration of this, beginning with God's call on a man to feed his family. Where does it go from there?
Right. So the idea is, so as a father, I have the responsibility to feed my children, to be the means through which God gives them their daily bread. But I don't own a farm. I don't have land. And if I did, I wouldn't know how to grow crops on it. So I rely on, I then go to the community to enable me to do the work that God has given me to do. So in my instance, I earn my living by being a parish pastor, but people do this in all different, obviously different kinds of work, where they're able to earn money and then put food on the table for their family and put a roof over their head that way. So if the reason you can't feed your family is because you don't have a farm, the community is there to give you a job. But if the reason you can't feed your family is because a foreign army is burning everyone's crops, then that's not really a problem the community can solve. It's a problem that the state solves. And so the community then goes to the state and implores the state to do its duty of protecting us from those who would do us harm. So then, yes. Yeah, so basically, with each step in the process, as the problems get bigger, you have sort of bigger solutions to them and more power in them. But of course, the problem with this, and this is I think certainly unique with the one of the good things about the U.S. government, is that the U.S. government recognizes that in and of itself, it is a limited thing. It has its limitations. It's oftentimes too oafish and distant to navigate the kind of rockier waters and more unique waters of individual family life. You know, so for example, when you look at the concept of the Bill of Rights, and the idea of, well, you know, how does freedom work? Well, when the government tells us, well, all right, we're going to protect the right to free speech, that's not really the government saying we think it's good for people to say outlandish and offensive things, but rather it's just simply the government saying we're not designed to distinguish between what should be good to say and what shouldn't be good to say. So rather, we're just going to preserve that right for everyone, and then we're going to trust that, you know, functional, faithful families will teach their children to exercise that right properly, and that communities will effectively reward them for that. So there's a kind of a symbiotic relationship between these things where they're all, at least in theory, ought to be working together for the same kind of common goal.
You're talking there about, really, in essence, kind of an insight that families have limitations. Neighborhoods have limitations. Governments have limitations.
Well, yeah, so just that governments and families and communities all have limitations, but they have different limitations in different ways. So, and that's precisely the point, is that they are, so sort of, in the same way that the division of powers in the United States government is meant to basically protect against tyranny, and it's, so in the same way that this, when God sort of organizes society in this way, he does so in such a way where the goal is for these various different institutions to be of service to each other in their own kind of limited capacity.
How does this apply in particular to the case that forms the context for our conversation, the shooting in Florida?
Yeah, so, well, the young man who committed this atrocity, the alleged committer of this atrocity, I suppose people would say, was a kid whose parents both died. His father died a few years ago, mom died, his mother died shortly after that. And I think he kind of bounced around at a couple of different places, already was clearly exhibiting some severe signs of mental health problems and just of being a danger, which is obviously why, you know, a good solid number of people had reported him to the police. So it was just another kind of one of these examples of a young man who came from a broken family, not in the sense that his parents had divorced, but in the sense that just through death it was broken up and it was torn to pieces. And because he didn't have a kind of, at least by all accounts, didn't appear to have kind of a functional community to take him in and to make sure that he was getting the help that he needed and to make sure he was surrounded by, you know, the people who were with him would have had the, you know, the strength and in numbers of people in their community to say, we're gonna do kind of everything we can to make sure that he's getting the treatment that he needs, that he's not having access to these weapons. That's, kind of, again, going back to what I was saying before. You know, this is kind of one of the struggles with the Second Amendment, is that, and we all agree, there are definitely people who shouldn't have access to guns. But obviously, the federal government, certainly the government in general, is not always the best institution for figuring out, well, how do you make sure the people who really shouldn't have them don't have them, without hindering the right of people who would be perfectly safe with them to, you know, defend themselves and to have access to the things that they ought to have access to. And so, you know, in a community, you would hope in a situation like this could sort of resolve that tension by basically, you know, looking at a kid who clearly is not in the shape to have these. And if he had, you know, if he had some measure of functional parents who were around and able to work with them, they could just say, look, you may have a constitutional right to this stuff, but we're telling you we're going to come over, you know, we're going to put your guns in a safe location, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that he's not able to have access to them. And like so many other cases of mass shooters, there just doesn't seem to appear to have been any real functional community to kind of take in this broken young man before he could get broken even further and travel down this demonic path that he eventually chose.
We're talking about family, neighborhood, the state, and mass shootings. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. He is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column there titled To Prevent School Shootings, We All Need to Get Into Our Neighborhoods. He will also be making the case for the centrality of justification at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles outside of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. Pastor Feeney will be joined by Scott Klusendorf, Will Whedon, Hank Hanegraaff, Angus Manouge, Craig Parton, and Pastor Jonathan Fisk. You have 2 days left to take advantage of the early bird registration fee of $110. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. When we come back, this young shooter was on the radar of neighbors and law enforcement. People knew something was wrong and tried to do something. We'll talk about that after this.
We want to be honest about what the problems are. We want to know what our enemy's doing.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Scott Murray, editor of the new book, The Gates of Hell, Confessing Christ in a Hostile World.
But on the other hand, this is no time for despair. Well, why? Because Christ himself, the Lord of the church, promises that the gates of hell shall not prevail against her.
Learn more about the gates of hell at issuesetc.org.
Are you a high schooler who enjoys theology? Do you know a high schooler who would make a good pastor or deaconess? Every summer, Concordia Theological Seminary offers programs for vocational discernment and theological education for high school students. Check out Christ Academy and Phoebe Academy this summer, June 17th to the 30th. Registrations open now. Email us at christacademy@ctsfw.edu or register online. Christ Academy at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, June 17th through the 30th.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
The prosperity gospel, godliness, Islam, abortion, religious truth claims, scientism, the centrality of justification. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are talking about family, neighborhoods, the state, and mass shootings. Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. Hans, there was, at least according to reported accounts, there was some kind of neighborhood or community awareness of what was going wrong in advance of this shooting. The local law enforcement, even the FBI, were hearing reports of this young man and his family. It sounds like there were some people we would call neighbors who knew something was wrong and wanted to see something done about it.
Right. Yeah, and I certainly think that's good, and that obviously is something that you want to see happen, and you want to see it have the result of law enforcement taking it seriously. I kind of wonder if part of the problem is that, because we just don't have a more functional sense of community, that it's just not taken all that seriously, you know, when it happens, or, you know, perhaps, or it's just simply perhaps there, you know, there could be a better way for, you know, people just in, as opposed to just simply on a one-on-one level coming, you know, is that people sort of collectively as a school district, as, you know, as a, if you have people who are all members of the same congregation or whatever it may be, just going to law enforcement and say, you know, and there's sort of greater influence in numbers in being able to kind of say this collectively. But yeah, obviously you need to have the government pay attention to that. You need to have those in law enforcement figure out a way to not only take it seriously, but to implement steps to actually be able to do something with that information, which, you know, very well may have been the problem with this, you know, is that if you get a sort of a weird feeling from a guy, you say, oh, I think this guy, you know, might end up doing something dangerous. Well, obviously that's not sufficient in order for people to sort of trample over due process. But obviously if there's a greater sense of community and there's a greater voice there, that you might be able to connect some dots there that otherwise haven't been able to be connected.
One kind of objection that I want you to respond to, and that is someone says, well, how is what you're saying here any different than kind of the classic formula that I believe at the time a Senator Hillary Clinton observed, it takes a village to raise a child. How is this different?
Well, it's different in the sense that the child doesn't belong to the community and the child doesn't belong to the state. A child belongs to his parents, and they are the ones whom God has given to care for him. So they're the ones who are responsible for him. They're the ones who are carrying that out. I don't, however, think that we ought to let any sort of preconceived political biases blind us to the fact that obviously you need other people in order to survive. I mean, this is, you know, when Luther is listing off in the catechism all of the various gifts that God gives to us in the form of daily bread, you know, he's just kind of going on and on about it. And it's, you know, good friends, good neighbors, good government, all of these things. And the reason for that is because you can't do these things all on your own. So it's difficult to support a family just with your own farm, without if you have one person to work on a farm that you own that you use to feed your children with, that's a community right there. You know, and so if you need to have a job, obviously if you belong to a church that you need to belong to in order to gather with your fellow believers and be mutually comforted by the preaching of the word, that's a community. And certainly your children absolutely need that in their lives. They need that community of believers in order to give them a place where they can regularly and routinely hear the word of forgiveness. So the fact that it's necessary oftentimes, and in many ways, to have a community doesn't mean that a child somehow becomes less under the care of his or her parents. It's just simply a reflection of the nature of reality, that as long as there's a world that needs to be tamed, as long as the curse of Adam is present in this life, then you're going to need help from numerous people in order to survive this world of sorrows and difficulties.
Well, you know as well as anyone that the neighborhood, so to speak, the community of people who live in proximity to one another, has become a very fragmented thing. Indeed, one of the things that I believe has fragmented it is just the simple access to easy divorce, where
right.
a neighborhood that would otherwise be kind of nuclear families, all more or less nuclear families, all living within proximity of one another with shared concerns about the community and shared desires for the community, things like that. Divorce just drives wedge after wedge after wedge into the smallest of neighborhoods, just one city block. It can isolate families from one another. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. So, I mean, again, the family is the building block of society. And so when you have broken families can find help in functional communities that are made up of functional families. But if you just don't have functional families, you're not going to have a functional community. You're not going to have the strength and the leadership that you need in order to yield those things. So, yeah, wherever you have that kind of level of instability, and one of the ways in which this only exacerbates the problem is when you have divorce, you oftentimes have people trying to convince themselves that they can do this on their own. You have single mothers or single fathers insisting that they are capable of rising to the challenge of being able to meet the needs for their children, and that they don't need, you know, the husband or the wife that God gave them and that God required in order for this child to even come into the world. And when people are of that mindset, there's a defensiveness there that exacerbates this problem of, well, we don't need to rely on other people. So that when the time comes when you actually do, you don't even know how to access the institutions that are there to give you that level of help. So yeah, I think that's certainly true. But yeah, when you don't have functional families, when you've got a single mom who's working all the time and she's not seeing her children terribly often, they're not just having a chance to sort of, you know, play outside with the neighbor kids. People don't get to know their neighbors as much anymore. You know, these things are all, I think, very much wound together. And certainly, yeah, if you look at the surveys of these things and the data of these things, that since the 1970s. And I talk about this briefly in the piece, the level of community engagement in our country has dropped in virtually every category that there is. So we don't go to church as often. We don't see our neighbors as often. We don't spend as much time with coworkers. People don't belong to labor unions as much as they used to, you know, kind of things of that nature. Now, I mean, you argue about whether that's a good thing or not that people belong to labor unions, but the point is there's certainly still a sense of community and belonging there that's the case. Likewise, I couldn't find any data on this, but I can only imagine that, you know, any kind of ethnic organization, you know, so belonging to the Polish Club or the Sons of Norway or whatever it may be, that membership in those organizations has just dropped rapidly. And it all coincides with, so the data I have in the study that I link in the piece all starts in the 1970s. So once you get to the point where no-fault divorce begins kind of tearing a hole in the fabric of the American family, then that this is right when you see this just sort of drastic drop in the level of community engagement.
Finally, you say that the what you call fake social networks can never substitute for real social networks.
Right, yeah. I think one of the great and wonderful things about the Internet is that it enables you to gather together with like-minded people without being encumbered by geographic distances. So whatever you're into, whatever interests you, whatever your passion is, you're able to find people throughout the world who are into that, and they like to talk about it, and it's great. You know, I mean, you certainly see this, we Lutherans see this all the time, you know, with groups devoted towards people talking about Lutheran theology and things of that nature. And that's great, but also the downside of the internet is that exact same thing, is that it enables people to create these kind of sort of a facade of community where, sure, you're able to, you know, through the power of the internet, type words to people, and those people agree with you and you feel some sense of connection with them, and maybe at some point you might end up meeting a couple folks that you wouldn't have met otherwise. But these are not people who are going to be able to see your face. They're not going to be people who are going to be able to tell if something's wrong, where they can see that if you need help putting food on the table, if they can see that you've got a, you know, a son who's troubled, who needs to have some kind of stable influence from a man in his life and things of this nature. That's just not how the internet is designed to work. It's not designed to create a sense of genuine, real belonging towards people who can actually be in the same room. But the problem is because it gives you kind of enough of a sense of community, it really, I think, has come to justify a tremendous amount of antisocial behavior in people and cause people to just simply retreat from having actual relationships with the people who are around them and with the people who are supposed to be a part of your community. I mean, the reality is, if you're, I mean, just for example, from a church perspective, if you're spending more time talking theology with strangers on the internet than you are with the people in your own congregation, that's not a good place to be in.
So finally, with about 30 seconds here, why has God given us the three interrelated kind of social networks, to use a rather sterile and overused term, the family, the neighborhood, the state?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can certainly say that God has instituted the family and that he's instituted the state. I mean, there's obviously biblical evidence abounding for both of those. The community is one where there's not a sort of a clear passage of God saying he's instituted this. It's more just of an observation of this space that exists in the middle. But obviously, we can just see from experience that this is a good gift that God has given to us, and it's a gift that's meant to link both of those two institutions of the family and the state together. It's a gift that's given not only to be of service to families when they're broken and struggling with the difficulties and challenges of this life, but it's also a gift that's given to the state when the state is struggling to navigate the trickier cases of, you know, balancing our rights and our need to be protected and things of that nature. So it's a happy medium ground in between there that when it functions well can go a long way towards producing a society that helps a tremendous amount of people.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shawnahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and senior contributor to The Federalist, author of a recent column there titled To Prevent School Shootings, We All Need to Get Into Our Neighborhoods. You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on God creating the world in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. There aren't two creation accounts, but only one creation account told several different ways. We'll discuss that with him tomorrow. We'll also discuss a brief look at how and why men and women communicate with Pastor Jonathan Connor. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.